Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End. I'm DCW, not John. He's on holiday, sunning himself somewhere in France. So joining us today for a look back at the 1-0 defeat to Stoke and ahead to the game against Blackburn at the weekend and various other talking points. First of all, we've got Mike. How are you, Mike?
Yeah, I'm really good. And Watford were apparently so bad on Saturday that I'm going to do exactly what John's done and go on holiday as well. So, yeah, well done, Watford. You've forced me to leave the country.
And also joining us is Charlie Zazera, who you'll recognise from the Watford Twitter spaces and from W18 as well. And he's been on Rookery End before, I'm sure, at some point. Charlie, you were there at Stoke at the Bet365 Stadium at the weekend. Me and Mike weren't. I'm sure plenty of people listening to this maybe followed the game along on Saturday afternoon, how they could, or they might have seen the short highlights since. But as somebody who was at the stadium, watched the whole 90-minute performance, what was the performance like in general for you?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on. It is a debut, and I've been listening to you guys for a decade or so, so a proud day for me and my family. And as for the game away at Stoke, first away day of the season, representing the Northwest Hornets, and it was just a typical Championship away day, if I'm completely honest. It felt like I transported back 10 years ago to the Watford that we know before in the Premier League, before the Pozzos, and it was from the get-go that we knew that it was going to be a tough game, and if we were going to win, we were going to have to defend really, really well and get something on the break, which obviously didn't happen. I thought Stoke were as average as we were, but they had one moment of quality. I thought we did respond really, really well after conceding and were the only team who wanted to get the next goal, but we just didn't have that quality in the final third, which saw us lose our first game of the season.
Charlie, what's impressed me a little bit with Watford so far this season, they have looked pretty, they've started games pretty well, they've looked like they've slipped into their tactics pretty quickly, they've zipped the ball around, the intensity's been there, and I think we did ask ourselves, how would Watford away from home look from Watford at, differ from Watford at Vicarage Road? How did it feel? Did they start quickly? Was that the sort of, because there has been a vague sense of being just about satisfied with how Watford had been playing so far this season, certainly at home. Was it straight from the off that Watford looked a little bit out of sorts? Because it felt like, and it sounded like, they weren't really able to raise themselves out of a sort of that away day slumber that sort of that seems to be affecting Watford for the last couple of months. Did they just not start well? Were they not able to get a foothold in the game at all?
Yeah, I think that was one thing that disappointed me probably the most, is that we've been quite happy, especially the home games, with a new identity that we've seen, where we've seen kind of Sierra as that false nine and going from a three to...
False nine?
A false nine. A false six, sorry. I'm getting too...
the falsest of false nines.
I'm getting too fancy with my terminology, but that Sierra Alta new role that we didn't see coming. But we just didn't see that identity. We didn't see James Morris or Ryan Andrews come centrally. And Mike, you were at the Stevenage game and it felt very similar to that. Obviously, we were full strength for that Carabao Cup game, but there's something that worried me in terms of everything that we've worked on and we've enjoyed from the QPR and the Plymouth game. We haven't been able to impose ourselves and be confident to play in our new style of play. That was the biggest disappointment for me.
It's interesting you mentioned the Stevenage match there, because me and Mike were talking earlier and we were trying to sort of get our heads round about what's the mood of this pod? How should we really be feeling at this moment in time after three games of the season in the league? I actually think if you take away the QPR game, the Stevenage game, the Plymouth game and the Stoke game probably give you quite a good reflection of where we're at as a team at the moment. And I think that's reflected maybe in some of Valerian Ismail's post-match comments. The QPR game was obviously brilliant, great day, great performance, but let's be honest, aided by a team who don't look very good and had a defence that was gaping wide open after 30 seconds for us to take advantage of, and we capitalised and we did well. But it feels like that was probably the anomaly, really, compared to the three games we've seen, which have pretty much had the same team as well, as you say. So I think we probably shouldn't be too down at the moment, because we need to recognise that we are very much a work in progress.
Yeah, it's about being realistic, isn't it? And I've certainly cautioned or ask for patience, and that's really a reminder to myself, because I'm one to get, I always say never too high, never too low, and I'm the one that always is too high and too low. And I do think we do need to be patient, because it is a new style of play we're trying to implement. We're asking a lot of our goalkeeper and our defenders, but also the squad is really, really thin. I did want to just go back to the game on Saturday. I did want to ask Charlie whether those already, you know, Sierralta wasn't available on Saturday. It's questionable whether how comfortable he is in that that new role he's got already, but he wasn't available, so Jake Livermore had to come in. And Gakia is injured. James Morris went off injured on Saturday. Charlie, be interested to get your take on that, how serious that looked. So I think it is about being realistic, and part of that realism is about the squad that we have, isn't it? It is paper thin, is probably pushing it a little bit, but there isn't really much to go at. We're already seeing, you know, with those couple of injuries, we're already looking at it, scratching our heads a little bit and thinking, how's this going to pan out over the course of the season? And I think you're probably right, Dave, is that it should be just about okay.
I see what you mean, but again, I think we shouldn't necessarily like panic too much. We've had a few injuries, football players get injured, and yeah, we've had probably more than our fair share, certainly in the last year, but maybe a bit more, you know, even further back than that. But Ishmael said that he wants two players in every position. That's quite a common thing for a manager to say. So, you know, the issue with the left-back situation is we haven't got two players fit in that position now. You have Ken Sema has to drop in, but Ngakia's not fit. Okay, Andrews plays. Sierralta's not fit. Okay, Livermore plays. The backups have to come in and play. You can't just hold three or four players in every position because that's just not workable. You know, we could have kept Ferreira maybe for the right back, but then you've got three right backs and one of them's never going to get a look in, and we've said that we don't want people knocking about the training ground who don't want to be there and aren't happy. So you kind of have to weather it a bit, but it would be nice if, you know, Jamal Lewis could get fit and could come in and can compete for that left back spot so Sema doesn't have to play there. And we obviously do want one or two more players beyond, you know, he's spoken about wanting other players as well beyond just the obvious need for a striker, which we'll come on to later. So again, I just think I'm trying to calm everyone down and say let's not panic. It's maybe we've got memories of last season when there were 10 players injured at once. We're not there yet, are we?
No, we're not. And I think, look, one drawn, one lost, one, it probably feels absolutely where we're at.
Yeah.
How do you feel, Chaz?
Yeah, just to Dave's earlier point when he mentioned about the Plymouth game, I actually think we probably played better against Plymouth than maybe we did against QPR. It was the first time I saw consistent patterns. I was moving the ball around, creating chances. And on another day, we win that 2-0 or 3-0. So I actually think that's where maybe there might have been a bit of expectation going in. In terms of kind of the injuries, Morris went off. Morris, I've been a big advocate of Morris. I think he's been brilliantly since he's come in. But I think he had probably one of his worst games for us against Stoke, unfortunately. Ishmael said he went off for cramp, which I find a bit bizarre in the first half. That's something you don't usually hear about. I thought Ken does what Ken does, and he replaced him pretty well.
Do you think he might have been hurt, Charlie? Do you think he might have been? If you say, I really haven't seen much about the game, but if you're saying he had a really bad performance, do you think Ishmael might have? Because he does strike me as someone who's not shy about making a decision like that. Do you think he might have been taken off for that?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. We were talking about it on WD18 yesterday, and we were saying Val was giving him an earful. He was on his side of the pitch in the first half, so it must have been a tough game. So I wouldn't be surprised, and that cramp was kind of a caveat. But Sema filled in. Like I said, it'd be nice to see Lewis, and we've seen already Sierralta go out. I actually thought Kayembe did pretty well when he came on. And then the most interesting sub that we didn't see come on was Bio staying on, and still no Reece Healy. So I think we have got a lot of work to do. It's kind of quiet in terms of incomings, but it feels like we are incredibly thin on the ground, especially when you look at last season, the injuries that we had midway through last season. It was up to 10 to 15 injuries, and we were really, really struggling. If that happens this season, Mike will probably get asked to get his boots back on.
How did Jake Livermore look, Charlie?
Jake Livermore looked exactly as you'd expect Jake Livermore to look. I didn't see him going into the back three like Sierralta does. He got caught on the ball a couple of times, but apart from that, he was absolutely fine. Couple of okay passes left and right, but I think at this level, he's not going to be a game changer. He's not going to dictate play, and it's exactly as we kind of thought it'd be. I think his qualities are probably more kind of that leadership off the field stuff. But like I said, I wanted to give a shout out to Kayembe because I thought when he came on, he was the one driving the ball, playing passes early and trying to make something happen. So,
because to Dave's point, we have to be right. He is right. We have to ride through these injuries. It happens. Every single club in the land at whatever level suffers from injuries. But the reality is we're getting an early look at the people who are coming in when these injuries do take place. And I guess my question is, you know, what do they look like? And okay seems to be the verdict from Charlie from watching on Saturday. And it's just whether okay is what this Watford side is shaping up to be, which I think is, I guess is probably right, really, isn't it? I mean, you can't be looking at this side and thinking, well, this is a team that's going to certainly challenge for the top two spots. Absolutely no chance you'd say of that. Perhaps an outside run at the playoffs, but it's about how we feel about watching it, isn't it? And I guess if Valerian Ismail did make that brave sub to take off James Morris before half time because he's not playing well, I'm quite pleased about that in a way, because he has been, like you say, Charlie, he has been one of the better players so far this season. He's caught my eye as well. And if that's a little wake up to him that he's not going to get away with not performing well just because it's away at Stoke and it's a little bit more difficult and the locals are a bit noisier than they are at Vicarage Road or Stevenage.
Who did he replace him with? Yasser Asprilla. And he moves Semmer left back, and Yasser Asprilla is one of the players who he excites the fans. He's got real quality with his passing, can make things happen. Unfortunately, he missed our biggest opportunity in the game. He had one header which got flashed across. Yeah. Maybe he could have done better, but he had a real opportunity. It was a good move. He sells the defender and he kind of panicked and the shot was straight at the goalkeeper. So I really like the move from Val. I thought it was pretty proactive even before the first half. And then we saw the Val trademark three subs on 60 minutes, which again, interesting. I wouldn't have taken off Loser. I think Loser's one of the few players that we've got who has got quality, who could get us a goal. But I thought, apart from that, Chatfedetsky looked bright again. He looked a bit more like when he came on against QPR, beating players, driving into the box. So I think Val has been proactive and I like it.
It has been notable, hasn't it, so far, that we've had good options off the bench in games, and he hasn't been afraid to make, as you say, make these multiple substitutions, make four at a time or whatever, replacing the whole midfield in some games in one go, which I think is a good thing. But it also speaks to me that maybe he doesn't quite, he's still sort of working out the squad a little bit as well. I know we've had similar starting lineups, but I do think after, say, 10 games or so, you know, we could see someone like Yasser Asprilla will be a nailed down starting place. Is Chatfedetsky going to be starting games? Kone's come off the bench in every game so far. Is he going to edge out Deli Bashiru? It does seem to me there's quite a lot of battles in the squad over positions, which is probably quite a healthy position to be in.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. And I think as Valerian Ismail, you're going to have to change. I think you are going to have to be nimble and a bit more malleable with your approach, because teams, certainly the better teams at the top of the table, will work Watford out and will know what they have to do to take us apart, really. You'd have said on some of our defensive sort of showings so far. You look, I watched Leicester on the opening day and you think, God, the way they close down, the way they move the ball around, the speed at which they do it, as you'd expect from a team that's come down from the Premier League, it's going to be difficult. So we are going to have to, Valerian Ismail is going to, you would have thought, have to change things and mix things up a little bit. I do want to just touch on that Yasser Asprilla chance, Charlie. That's the one bit I have seen, and the potential Chatfedetsky penalty. The ball hit him as opposed to him heading the ball, didn't it? It really was a difficult chance. So I think to put that down as a missed opportunity for him is a tough one. But I would expect to see Valerian Ismail move things around a bit. And I think you're right, Dave. I think he is trying to work out how best he can affect a game as it's unfolding. And I think one of the benefits we have got is that bench. I remember looking at it on the first day, and the bench looked really strong, didn't it, for a Championship side, potentially not tipped for the top. And there is talent there. Charlie mentioned Loser going off. Asprilla, I think, has effectively got the world at his feet. I think he's going to be an incredible player for Watford. Chatfedetsky came on, and what did the penalty look like from where you were sat, Charlie? For me, I've sort of watched it a couple of times. It looked like the Stoke fans were saying he was asking for it. He was already going down when the tackle came in, but it looked like one that potentially, if that went to VAR, it would have been a pen. What was the feeling in the stands?
Obviously, in the away end, rules of penalty ref when you see it. But the one big indication for me was none of our players were appealing. And nowadays in modern football, you think when there's any sort of penalty, you have a horde of players running over asking for it. So, yeah, when I saw that, I think maybe he's gone over too easy. It's hard to see, but again, I did like it from Chatfedetsky. He did really well. He was brave. He was driving at people, riding tackles. He got kicked up the park a few times. And I think I prefer him a bit more in that central area compared to out wide. He seemed a bit more predictable out wide, where he might run and you know he's going to cut in and try and curl it. But out wide, he's kind of, in the middle, he floats around and he looks dangerous and a real exciting player.
One player who made his debut for Watford is Tom Ince. How did he look when he came on?
It's hard seeing Tom Ince in a Watford shirt. It still hasn't really... I couldn't believe what I was seeing, but I don't think he had his best debut. A couple of touches, I thought he lost the ball quite cheaply and struggled to kind of influence the game in any way, really. He came on as the wide right attacker. I think he was a bit of a later sub, but he couldn't really get onto the game. I think he misplaced it a couple of times. So it's going to be interesting to see his role in the team and if he's looking like he might start down the line. Where would he start? Is he more central? I thought at Reading he definitely played a more central role. I think one of the things, maybe if I'm looking at a positive, you can see he's pressing hard off the ball. He did make a nuisance of himself running around, but just on the ball, he didn't do anything that kind of excited or anything effective. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where he fits into this interesting new Watford puzzle.
And the other thing I sort of noticed after the game was that Valerian Ismail was not for the first time in this short season so far quite critical of the players and quite honest without sort of digging them out. He was sort of quite realistic, you know, and he was sort of pulling no punches, but also kind of, you know, he recognised kind of the things we've already been talking about in terms of his early days and he's still getting to grips with it all. But I like the cut of his jib. I kind of like what I'm hearing from him, and I think it's good that he's talking about, look, we need to get consistency. We need to get to a point where we're able to go on a 7, 8, 9, 10 match unbeaten run and win multiple games in a row, which was the big thing that we just didn't do last season. We were just constantly stop, start. And he's right to sort of pinpoint that as something we need to do. Obviously, we're not there yet. But I kind of like what I'm hearing from him so far. I feel like I'm all being well and he stays around long enough. I feel like he might be the guy that we can maybe start to build something of an affinity with.
I think he's all part of that approach, hopefully by design. It's part of the big reset. Is we've got football, we've got Watford supporters travelling away still really in hope rather than expectation. The Watford's away record has been pretty poor for a while now. Home fans haven't had it much better either. So what Watford supporters need is a bit of balm, if you like, is at least the head coach showing he recognises what the situation is. Not coming out with platitudes, not protecting necessarily the players, not sort of telling us stuff that we know didn't happen, trying to soft soap it. I quite like that. Like you say, Dave, I think it's important that we feel... as one with the head coach in terms of how we're looking at it and how we're appraising it. There's no point dressing it up as something it isn't. And I think one of the big opportunities for Watford as a football club this season is to almost reinvent ourselves as being together, as being up against it a little bit. Because I think that tends to be when Watford does its best work, when the supporters feels like we've got something to prove and it feels like we want to get behind them because it feels like they're not fancied or we're underdogs or whatever. So I think it can be, it just feels like part of that galvanising process from Valerian Ismail to say that, well, to say it how it is and to be critical of the players or the performance if it warrants it. And it was encouraging to see, I think, Ryan Porteous coming out after the game as well and making reference to the fact that Watford's away support have seen, you know, a litany of really poor performances over the recent sort of times, over the recent months. And he made sure he pointed out, didn't he, that that's not really on to turn in shows like that. And of course, as we know full well on from the rookery end, talk is cheap. It's all about how they go on and turn that sort of those words into meaningful actions on the pitch. But I like the cut of his jib as well, Dave. And we said in the live podcast before the season started, well, I did, it felt like he's about right for where we are at the moment. We need someone who's going to come in, roll his sleeves up, not worry too much about being pretty, not saying the right things, just getting on and doing. And so far, really, it feels like that's what he's doing.
Now, we're going to talk about the ongoing striker search in a minute, perhaps have a little bit of a look ahead to the Blackburn game. But first, a note on the women's team. They get their season underway on Sunday, kicking off on Sunday, actually midday, the same time as the men's team. Now, they're playing Durham, and the women's team, obviously, in case you missed it, are back in the Championship after getting promoted last season in that gripping playoff final game at MK Dons. And we will be releasing regular pods this season about the women's team, focusing purely on them, talking about their games and their results and talking to some of the players and people involved in the women's side of things, which will be great. So ahead of that first game on Sunday and ahead of their season back in the Championship, let's check in with our resident women's football expert, Kieran, for his assessment of the team's prospects.
So Watford's much-anticipated return to the Barclays Women's Championship kicks off this weekend, as DCW has outlined, against Durham, and it's certainly not the easiest start in what is going to be a challenging season for the Golden Girls in what is probably the most competitive division in the women's football pyramid. For those not familiar with the Women's Championship, two clubs will be relegated for the first time and only one, as always, will be promoted into the Women's Super League. So Watford are certainly going to have to be at their best to ensure they retain their status. Are they capable of competing for promotion? I think that's probably a little bit far-fetched. I think the key thing for the team this year will certainly be to try and retain their status, try and establish themselves as maybe a mid-table team in the division and then look to push on maybe in the next 2 or 3 years, because it is a difficult division to get out of with only that one promotion position. Some of the clubs around them have certainly got more Women's Super League experience. The likes of Charlton have signed players from West Ham and Liverpool. Other clubs have raided Reading following their relegation into the Championship, and some of their players was certainly good enough still to play in the Women's Super League. So Watford are going to have a challenge on their hands. They've gone with a slightly different approach to their recruitment. No real Women's Super League experience other than Gemma Davison, who was at the club last season, who's been there and done it with many of the top clubs in England. Signed a few players from the Women's Championship. They've also signed the top scorer from the Women's National League South Division, where they've just been promoted, from Carly Johns from Oxford United. One player I would keep an eye out for, though, is Michelle Adjumang, who has just signed on a dual registration from Arsenal. Michelle was second top scorer at the UEFA Women's Euro under 17 earlier this year. So certainly one to keep an eye on, because speaking to some Arsenal fans, I know that they see her as a real prospect for the team in the future. So the weight of expectation in terms of the goals would certainly look to fall on Michelle and Carly, having come in from Oxford to replace the now retired Helen Ward. Of course, there are plenty of players that have come back from last season who will be looking to cement their place in the team this year and look to make an impact. Be an interesting one for the team, be an interesting one for Damon Lathrop. I think they should be fine. I don't see promotion and I don't see them fighting for promotion, but I would like to think that they are good enough to stay up in what is, as I say, a really difficult division. So good luck to the team this weekend. Come on, you Golden Girls.
Now, the main topic away from the on-pitch action really at the moment is our ongoing search for a number nine, for a striker. We didn't get Sori Cabba, who we were linked with. I think he went off to a club in Spain, didn't he? There's been various names floating about, but the latest man in the frame seems to be Shamar Nicholson from Spartak Moscow, formerly of Charleroi in Belgium, which we all are familiar with in terms of that pipeline into Watford. But Charlie, from your perspective as a man who, you know, knows the tactical side of the game as well and has obviously seen us play at the weekend, how much do we really need this? What appears to be, we want a big, tall, athletic number nine.
Yeah, I really feel, bless him, Vakum Baia, he had a really tough game against Stoke. Like, some of the stats: zero shots, fewest touches of anyone who started, out of his aerial duels he only won 2 out of 7 and lost possession 8 times. And one thing I said yesterday, what I know some people said Keenan Davis, they didn't like this about this game, but I thought that sometimes he'd drop deep to get involved, which would be quite a benefit to the team and he'd be turning, but Bio just seemed to kind of float around the box and hoping something was going to fall to him so we could poke it home, and he just didn't get involved enough. I think he's a massive confidence player and at the moment his confidence isn't there. Some big misses against Stevenage, even the QPR, he probably should have scored a hat-trick. It's so clear about this number nine position. I think Val said it as well. It'd be interesting how Bio's taken that. That might not have helped his confidence. But yeah, we need this number nine desperately. I think they're trying to find the right person, right attitude. They've got to get the right fit for the team and for the new culture that they're trying to breed with this squad. In terms of Nicholson, I've got to be honest, I don't know too much about him. He's 26, Jamaican international. He's been playing in Russia for Sparta and Moscow. The profile looks pretty spot on. Tall number nine, runs about a lot, decent finisher, but it's hard to say too much. It'd be interesting to say later as the window goes what options will come up when Premier League teams are looking to loan their players. We saw it last season with Keenan Davis and Hamza Chowdhury. So I think they're trying to wait for the right moment. I think Adam Leventhal said, Nicholson, there's talks, but it'd be interesting to see who they bring in, but it is absolutely essential. It's probably the difference from us having a positive season to maybe struggling or definitely being mid-table.
Yeah, I mean, we have to remember that we're trying to be balanced. We're rightly being positive about certain aspects of the club. Watford haven't scored a league goal since the 43rd minute of the opening game. So what's that? Well over 230 odd minutes since we scored. We have had chances, but that's kind of even more concerning, isn't it? Charlie alluded to Bo's chance at Stevenage. I think a striker on top of his game tucks that away.
And we're desperate. 1-1 against Plymouth as well.
Yeah, and just take a touch. And Charlie saying he's a confidence player, you think back at that sort of, I was going to call it a highlights reel, but it's the opposite, isn't it? It's those chances that he's missed. A striker on top of his game takes those, and it's sort of a little bit dispiriting to hear just how lacklustre, if you like, his performance was on Saturday at the Bet365. Probably not down to him entirely, but what I did like about his performances so far, he's obviously limited, but he hasn't gone hiding. He hasn't gone missing, I don't think, in games necessarily. He hasn't, but it sounds like he's sort of starting to find things a little bit tough going. But the market seems to be, I mean, you mentioned Sorry Cabba, he's gone off to La Liga, you know, and the Birmingham were apparently leading the chase with us. He's gone, you know, he's not a player that potentially would have been top of many Championship supporters' hit lists, was he, in terms of coming in as a striker? He's had a very sort of okay-ish career as a striker, and he's gone to the top flight somewhere. So that just shows where the market is, where you've got players in the Championship with middling records that aren't going to have people sort of celebrating and going out and getting their names on the back of the shirt straight away, going off to top flight elsewhere in Europe. So I think Charlie's right. I think it's all going to come down to what Premier League teams have left and what they have available and what they have willing to put on. I mean, Cameron Archer isn't one we're going to get for obvious reasons, but he played yesterday for Villa. He came on as a substitute in a decent Aston Villa side. So it feels like there's a lot of people. The number nine is the most sought after position and the hardest to fill. If you've got a number nine that's scoring lots of goals, is either going to be a lot of money or B, not for sale. So I have sympathy. But also, there's absolutely no denying from it, no hiding from the fact that without one, this is going to be a very, very long, difficult season.
It's clear as well, though, that we, unless they really are keeping their powder dry for a last-minute sort of option that comes along, it's clear that we don't really want to spend any money, do we? If you compared to a lot of the other teams in the division, you look at some of the teams, like a team like Coventry, who obviously went close last season, spent a lot of money, sold their two best players, but they've reinvested that money directly into the squad. Stoke did quite a lot of business, who we've just lost to. There's a lot of teams that have spent a reasonable amount of money for the Championship. We're right down there. All the signings we've made have been free transfers. I mean, we paid Buttons for Tom Ince, didn't we, with that release clause. So it does feel like we're going to end up with someone from the bargain basement, if you like. Nicholson might come in and be brilliant, and if he does, good luck to him. Like, some of the highlights reels look quite good, but we all know the pitfalls with reading too much into those sorts of videos. I kind of feel like I would like us to wait for a Premier League loan if we could. I sort of feel like Keenan Davis could be quite good in this setup, to be honest. I know he had his ups and downs last season, and I don't for any moment think that it's a realistic prospect. I imagine they'll just want to move on from that, otherwise they probably would have done it already. But I kind of think that he's the sort of player that could do well with this system, Charlie, don't you think?
I really like Keenan Davis, and I just think he was a victim of the negativity and the bad culture from Watford, and that might be one of the reasons that we wouldn't bring him back in. You could see him at his best last season against Luton, what he can do. And yeah, you would have thought that he would suit this system. Like I said a bit earlier on, I like the way he drop deep and get on the ball, shoulder a few men off him and create space for other people. I can't see it happening. I have no idea. I think the whole business and the way the club are operating this time round is a lot more secretive, which I'm thinking is a good thing. So I'm hoping they're going to pull something out of the hat, and we're going to find a new Vidra, Ighalo, Deeney, someone like that. That we need fans. They need a player who we can fall back in love with, because it feels like a long time now. Obviously, we had Joel Pedro, but again, he was part of a difficult couple of years. So we need someone that these fans can fall back in love with and who's going to start scoring again.
There isn't money. That is absolutely clear. And I think the sooner we recognise that and deal with it, the better. It could be for one of two reasons. There literally isn't any money available. and they're cutting their cloth accordingly. There has to be an element of that second year outside the Premier League, and we only get, was it 1 year or 2 years of parachute payments, and there seemed to be some sort of forward funding deal done with that. So look, they're obviously not spending, whatever the reason for that is, whether they're preparing for a sale, who knows. But the reality is, if we were going to spend, we'd have done it by now. We just have to accept that, keep a watching brief on that, and supporters try and work out what the issue there is with finances. I think that's a conversation and investigation, if you like, for another day. Obviously want to keep an eye on, but there is no doubt that this squad is going to be put together on a shoestring, and that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about support. That's something we can get behind. That it makes us underdogs effectively, and that's sort of the big rebuild. I don't necessarily mind that, but Charlie is right. You do need something to get the blood pumping a little bit. We've been spoiled, I think, over the years, mentioning João Pedro. We've talked about Yasser Asprilla already today, and we know how good he's going to be. Imran Louza is another one that's exciting. So this isn't a squad completely devoid of stardust or magic.
You're hoping for another Igalo or another Vidra, Charlie. I think it's more likely that we end up with another Matthias Ranigi, actually, with the state of things. But before we go, quick look ahead to the game against Blackburn on Sunday. Midday kickoff. Everyone remember that. Don't get caught short. Blackburn have had the same start to the season as us. 1-1, drawn 1, lost 1. Team that nearly got in the playoffs last season after having been up there for so long, and they just failed at the final hurdle. Do you think we'll see any team changes, Charlie, perhaps? Injuries notwithstanding, in terms of performance, maybe?
There's not any glaring changes that I can see. I think Morris will come back in. It doesn't seem like Lewis is any closer to being fit to play. And then I'm trying to look around. Does he roll the dice and play a bit more of a Chapfidetsky instead of maybe Tom Delibashiru, who I thought had a pretty difficult game at Stoke? Kind of not went missing, but the game kind of bypassed him and he wasn't as effective. So I can't see any glaring changes. I'm just glad we're back at Vicarage Road. I've been enjoyed the last two games. It feels like some good vibes back at the Vic. So hopefully, did Blackburn, am I right in saying they lost
at home
and lost a hole? So there's been a bit of negativity around them this season or ahead of the season. So hopefully we can get back to winning ways against Blackburn and the smile will be back and we'll have a spring back in our step.
I don't anticipate any changes really, apart from if they're enforced by injury. I think it's far too early in the piece to be worrying about whether these tactics or whether this approach is working or not. Obviously the number nine is a massive issue, but I think they've just got to keep on doing what they've been doing. Charlie's right, there is a bit of a feel good factor back at Vicarage Road. Hopefully it's a nice another sunny afternoon on Sunday and fans can get along and just carry on enjoying the football, hopefully get behind the side a little bit. I don't like 12 o'clock kickoffs, definitely not on a Sunday. You lose some of that big match sort of atmosphere. It just takes it away from it a little
bit. Holiday weekend though.
So what you're saying, you and Charlie will be about 4 points deep before the game kicks off, I'd imagine is what you're getting at there. But yeah, look, I don't anticipate too many changes. They need to stick. What we've said all along is what we want is a blueprint, and for them to stick to it and to work hard at it and to go with it. And if we throw it out after one indifferent performance away at Stoke, then I think we're doing ourselves a disservice. So stick with it. Trust the process, as people brighter than me say, and hopefully they can, like Charlie says, get back to winning ways.
I would like to see Reece Healy get thrown in. I think that could be quite a bit of a statement. Obviously, we haven't seen him so far. Val's talked about interviews of Andrew French that he's worried about kind of his injury and building up his confidence. But he has been on the bench and he has come on against Stevenage, and we need to see more than we've seen from Bio. So why not throw Reece Healy in and a bit of a joker in the pack to see what he can do. He can't be any worse than Bio was against Stoke. So I'd like to see Val do that. Give him his chance. Go on. Make yourself a bit of a hero.
Let's wait and see. Hopefully it'll be a good weekend for Watford men and women, both playing on Sunday, as we mentioned. So good luck to both. We'll be back next Tuesday to pick the bones of it all, whatever it happens, whichever way it goes. We'll see you next Tuesday. Everyone, enjoy the game. Charlie, thanks for joining us.
It's been an honour. Thanks for having me, lads.
And Mike, I'll let you finish the episode in the traditional way. Off you go.
Yes! Yes! Yes!